You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Talk is about to begin. Hey, 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 come on in.
Welcome back to your Wednesday Buckeye Talk from Cleveland.com. It's NFL Draft Week, and we're going to go into the future of the NFL Draft. On this podcast, we are going to predict how many guys, what round, who we think will be chosen in the 2023 NFL Draft from the Ohio State Buckeyes. We're doing this before the 2022 draft actually takes place. We did a decent version of this a year ago. We did it May 10th, so we did it after the draft. But I do kind of like this, guys, because A, nobody has 2023 really mock drafts out yet. It's just some weird sites that have like 9,000 pop-ups on them, but like everybody else will drop those after the draft. So we're early on that. But also we have to get this in before Nathan, your baby, comes. And if we do it, like, we couldn't record it today and then hold it until after the draft, because then we'd be talking about, you know, where Garrett Wilson actually went this year, and then you'd listen to it and you would know where Garrett Wilson went. So we need to record it now, and we need to drop it now. But it's good. It's draft week, and we're a year ahead. Buckeye Talk, Nathan. A year ahead of everybody else. That's what we do.
Yeah, I'm like a year and a week ahead of everybody else, actually. I do like that, because as we're about to probably discuss, when we look back at last year's, man, some of those early mock drafts are wildly inaccurate. And I think we can do better than that. I want us to be out in front.
A lot of seven banks a year ago. A lot of seven banks talk in the first round, which we were skeptical of then. Steven, do you think that we should be pretty good at this? Especially, we'll go over how good we were. But when we think about the 2023 guys, does it feel difficult? Or does it feel like, no, I think we'll be looking back a year now, we should nail this pretty well.
I think there are going to be three max that it's going to be an interesting discussion. Everybody else should be pretty easy.
Yeah, next year's group is a, I think, good overall draft class. I think it's a potentially really good at the top draft class for Ohio State. So I'll be curious. We want to get into the specifics a little bit with some guys because, you know, duh, everyone thinks CJ Stroud's going to be a first round pick, but I think we want to talk about that in a little bit more detail. But first, let's go back in time. May 10th last year, we did how many guys we think will be taken in the first round in the 2022 NFL draft. It was a market down Monday, and we referenced a podcast that we had done 5 weeks earlier, like on March 31st, where we had said, there are 15 first round picks on the Ohio State roster last March as spring football was happening. That was guys, you know, who were about to get picked. That was guys like Chris Olave and Justin and Garrett Wilson. That was guys in the future like CJ Stroud. I can't listen to, I listened to one of our old podcasts. I didn't listen to the whole who were the 15 guys, but I did listen who we predicted would be first round picks this year. Steven, do you happen to remember how many first round picks you predicted there would be for the Buckeyes in 2022?
Three.
Nathan, do you remember how many you predicted?
Probably not that many. Two.
I will say I couldn't exactly find, because we did it on the March pod first and we did it again in May. Steven got nailed down. Steven, you had four. Nathan, you had three or four, as far as I could tell. And I had
such
two.
A Nathan answer.
I was looking, I was like, where is the marking? I can't, it might have been in there. I just might have missed it. Listen, it was like an hour and 30 minute podcast. I didn't listen to every word. I was speeding through a little bit. When we had done the March one, both you guys were three or four. And so we all agreed Garrett Wilson will be a first round pick. Chris Olave will be a first round pick. So congratulations to us. We were all right. And I'm the most right because that's where I stopped. I just said two. Steven, you also said Zach Harrison and Nicholas Petit-Frere. And Nathan, I think you said Zach Harrison and not sure on Nicholas Petit-Frere, but it might have been reversed. You were like three and a half. So let's talk about Zach Harrison first. Nathan, predicting it a year ago and the fact that he's not in this draft, he's stayed in school for year four. How do we look back on the idea that a year ago, Zach Harrison was a guy we were thinking hard about as a first round pick?
Well, I think it's always at this stage about projecting the next jump. I think in the case of Zach Harrison, I don't think we were basing that prediction off of what he had done so far. It wasn't like someone like, for instance, Chris Olave or Garrett Wilson, who after 2 or 3 years in the program, even though they had another year coming, you were like, well, they already would have been a first round pick. Like if they'd come out, they would have been a first round pick. That wasn't the case, I don't think, with Zach Harrison at that time. But I think also we were influenced by the way the coaches were talking about him at the time. Like that was supposed to be like a big like breakthrough spring for him. Like, oh, we've seen something new out of Zach Harrison. And what we ended up seeing out of Zach Harrison last season, I would argue, was essentially the Zach Harrison we had been seeing all along, which is really solid football player, but who didn't take that next jump, especially as an edge rusher. And I have some comparative numbers that I don't know if we want to bring it up now. We can talk about it more, actually, when we start going player by player where we think they'll get picked next year. But I think that edge rushing element is so crucial. You can't just be a good defensive end. You've got to bring that extra thing, and that hasn't kicked in for him yet, and maybe it won't.
What do you think about Zach, Steven? Do you think what Nathan was saying, this is the way people were talking about him a year ago, was that a good pick a year ago to say, yeah, I think Zach Harrison will be a first rounder in a year?
Yeah, I mean, they talked about him as if we were ready to say he was going to have 7, 8, 9, 10 sacks, and maybe he wasn't going to be a top 10 pick, but he could be like in the 20s or maybe the teens. So yes, that's complete. That's why I guessed three, because I thought Zach Harrison would be the other guy. I guessed the Nicholas Petit-Frere one is where that caught me off guard a little bit, because he was playing right tackle at the time and we didn't know he was going to flip to left.
Yeah, we did. The right tackle thing was what I was hung up on. We did talk about, hey, Jedrick Wills was a right tackle and then he wound up being picked to play left tackle in the NFL. So Steven, you're saying, looking back, you're a little surprised that you had MPF as a first rounder a year ago.
Yeah, because even the whole Jedrick Willis thing sounds like some logic I would use. But yeah, I'm still surprised I said that.
What do you think, Nathan? I mean, he's in the conversation. We had discussions about Nicholas Petit-Frere. Nobody was saying, oh, my gosh, saying he's a first rounder is crazy. Right. It's just I didn't go there. And you, I think, were kind of on the fence about going there. You know, you look at the 5-star, you look at the frame. I think you look at the wingspan, you look at the intelligence, you look at the work ethic. I mean, there's a lot of pieces there, but it was interesting that when we were having that conversation, we were not thinking about him as a left tackle, which he wound up being. He actually wound up having a better opportunity to prove himself as a first round pick than we anticipated, but it didn't quite happen.
And he was also someone, as was Zach Harrison, I think we were projecting a little bit, but in his case, it was different because he had taken such a jump. Like it was like such a finally getting his chance to start. He had really proven himself that year. It was like, oh, everything that everyone had always expected from Nicholas Petit-Frere finally comes to fruition. And I think it was natural to think, well, with another year, like how much better is he going to be with another year? So you're right that moving to left tackle actually put him in a better draft position, but it also was a more difficult position to then try to have an even better year, if that makes sense. Like now you're moving, it's a more challenging position. It's different. You're changing in preseason camp, going to the other end of the line. So, and his performance obviously was at times it looked like we were right. And then in some big games, it looked like he needed more time or wasn't ready for that. It wasn't going to be a first round pick, certainly.
So again, he on the consensus mock draft database is the ninth tackle on that list. He's going to be a second or third rounder in this draft. He is not,
right.
You know, he did not fall off a cliff. And again, if he had kicked Aiden Hutchinson's butt, he might be a first rounder. So he was certainly sort of in that mix. If we had done a mock draft, I think, on the Buckeyes in October of last year, we might have had Nicholas Petitfrere in the first round, the way that he was playing in the first half of the season. So I think there was a good discussion a year ago. You know, we tried to do a thing. We were trying to figure out where other guys would go. We had a thing where this guy is a first round pick. Is it for sure, maybe, or definitely not? And we all had a guy like Thayer Munford. We decided was a maybe first round pick. That was probably a little optimistic. But again, Steven, at the time, we thought he was the left tackle. Now, I do think frame, raw athleticism, that kind of thing, he doesn't maybe measure up to guys like Paris Johnson or Nicholas Petitfrere or DeJuan Jones. But we were kind of high on Thayer back then as a maybe, like if he has a great year at left tackle. And again, he gets moved to guard and now he's going to be a middle round pick. But we were a little enthusiastic about that.
Yeah. I don't know about that one either. We were really off on some of these. Wow. Okay. So I'm trying to, because I'm wondering if the logic there was this guy's been a starting left tackle for 4 years now. Mm-hmm. And he's going to be ready to just get plugged right in, even if he's not, you know, within the top like 5th percentile of left tackles in the NFL.
I don't know. It's pretty, that was probably a pretty bad one by us, I think, actually, because I think the talk was already out there that he's going to end up as a guard. And we've talked many, many times on this podcast about just how much difference there is in the draft value of a tackle versus a guard.
So in the end, we did a final thing where we went through how many guys could be picked in the first three rounds of the 2022 NFL draft. And we went through all the possible guys. Nathan, do you want to guess how many guys we decided could be? We didn't mark that down exactly, but could be in the first three rounds.
In the first three?
First three rounds, like a top 100 pick.
Six.
Steven, how many think we said? Steven's video is not on. His camera's not working. So when I say, Steven, how many do you think we said? I don't know if he's pondering. I can't see if he has his head in his hand and is looking up and counting in his head, or if he just didn't hear me because I just see a black screen. And I will remind you guys, silence while you think is not great podcast material. So, Steven, did you hear my question?
Seven.
Oh, there we go. So I sing a song. Just sing a song while you guys. Seven. It was actually nine. And now let's play the back and forth game to see if you guys can name the nine Buckeyes a year ago that we thought could be picked in the first three rounds of this draft. Do the obvious.
Those other four are already gone, right?
So, well, no, it's all nine together. So it's the nine that we said in 2022 could be.
But we don't need to pick those four. We've already done those four.
Okay. So Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave. Who were the other ones? Zach Harrison.
Zach Harrison and Nicholas Petitfrere. And actually Thayer Munford. So we actually wants to pick the other four.
Five. All right. So Nathan, you do one. So that's five. Who was six?
Seven,
Nathan?
Seven Banks.
That's correct. Steven, who else?
Jimmy Ruckert.
Yes. Nathan.
Tyreek Smith.
Yes. And Steven.
Pass.
Pass.
Haskell Garrett.
Haskell Garrett. Those are the nine that we said. So, you know, like that's the seven guys who got invited to the combine, plus Seven Banks, who had a weird year, and Zach Harrison, who stayed in school. So they're not going to have all seven that's of those guys picked in the first three rounds. But I think everybody but Garrett could be probably not Munford. But I think the other five definitely could be.
I mentioned this when we did the draft last week, the predicting the 2022 draft, that we tend to overdraft. Like we tend to lean high on Ohio State guys. I thought we did a better job last week on that. I think we're gonna be more accurate this year because we got those guys right. But to say all those guys are gonna go in the first three rounds, I think was overly optimistic looking back on it. And I think we now some of it is also it's guys like Haskell Garrett who had like this big surge. So you're like, okay, so all he has to do is do another surge. But that's I think we're learning that how much harder that is to say than it is to do. Or I get why that is to say than do.
I get why Nathan's saying that, but I'll hold judgment until a year from now when we're in this exact same position.
Yeah, no, I'm excited. I'm excited for future Doug and future Nathan and future Steven to listen back on this and see how well we did. So anyway, this is for posterity. I don't know if people, if you guys out there, you can come back and listen a year from now too, if you want to, we'll direct you to it, but let's get down to business with the guys we think will be drafted in 2023. And what round we think they will go in. And we'll do that next on Buckeye Talk. Back with Doug and Nathan and Steven. Texters, 614-350-3315. I hope the number hasn't changed a year from now. So now you're listening back. It's like, I mean, the number would never change. We'll still be texting a year from now. 614-350-3315. Anything coming down the pike? There's been some transfers. There's always recruiting stuff. There's just analysis in the midst of the offseason. We'd love to have you if you've never tried it. You can give it as a gift. 614-350-3315. You send a text there. You get a link back to sign up and away you go. Okay. Steven, who do you think will be the first Buckeye drafted in 2023?
Stroud.
Nathan, do you agree with that?
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay. I think we all agree with that. Steven, what do you think the chances are of C.J. Stroud being the overall number one pick in the draft?
High, just because, I mean, right now the conversation is him and Bryce Young. Will Anderson will probably be the second pick, and it'll probably be 1 and 3 for the quarterbacks, just because that's sometimes it's how that works out. And it's literally going to come down to C.J. Stroud, 6'3", 215 pounds, and Bryce Young is 5'11", 205 pounds. So unless there's like a Joe Burrow, Mac Jones out there who just goes crazy, then, and right now, I mean, we can't predict that right now. And, you know, the last week of April, it's going to be Stroud.
Do you agree with that, Nathan?
Yeah, I think that's sound logic that he is playing in a system that will already sort of ask him to play quarterback like an NFL quarterback. He is being groomed, I think, not just because with the combination of what Ryan Day is teaching him to do, plus what Steven's saying just about his kind of conventional physical traits that trend more towards what a team wants in an NFL quarterback, which is why Ryan Day wants them in his quarterbacks. I think he would have the upper hand over Young or the other contenders.
And it feels like, I think the league's hungry for CJ Stroud, because on one hand we've seen that athleticism has become such an important part of what teams look for with quarterbacks in the NFL. And you can run through everybody from Josh Allen to Patrick Mahomes to Lamar Jackson to everybody else. But they also really, really value the processor. And there's not a guy in this current draft like CJ Stroud. There is one guy that I think is the closest, and I actually think he's kind of CJ Stroud light, and I like him a lot, and it's Desmond Ridder from Cincinnati. Desmond Ridder is 6'3", 211 was what his combine measurements were. CJ's listed at 6'3", 218 on the Ohio State roster. They're like big pocket passers who lead and process and have good arms and can move some. And there are some people who really think Desmond Ridder is the best quarterback prospect in this draft. There's a certain subset of people who believe that. And so if you like Ridder, and I think Ridder would make sense for a lot of teams. I think Ridder is a franchise, not a necessarily a, you know, Joe Burrow, Patrick Mahomes, elite kind of franchise quarterback, but I think you can win games with Desmond Ridder. But CJ's that plus. CJ's that and beyond. I think Ridder might be a slightly bit more athletic, but I think the only question with Ridder is accuracy, and there's not a question with that with CJ, the way he played in the second half of last year. And I do think, Steven, that if you just – and there are some teams who are going to wait. So, like, we can't predict, oh, what team, whatever, because I do think I think Will Anderson is a legit number one pick option, Steven. And if you wind up, if the Jags have the number one overall pick again, right? And it's like, well, they don't, they have Trevor Lawrence. They don't need a quarterback. I think they'd trade out of it because I think people will come jump to get CJ. Cause I think there's going to be some teams in this draft who are slow playing quarterbacks and waiting for a year. Detroit might be a team that does something like that and waits. And then you can see, I think, like what happened with the Rams and the Eagles in the 2016 draft when they traded up and took Jared Goff and Carson Wentz at the top. So I wouldn't say, oh, Will Anderson will be the number one pick if the number one team already has a quarterback. I think they'll auction it because I do think CJ could be that valuable because Kenny Pickett in this class has small hands. Malik Willis is interesting, but he's from a smaller school and he's more raw than CJ is. Sam Howell is Baker Mayfield 2.0. Matt Corral is good, but I don't know. And Desmond Ridder is a lesser version of CJ Stroud. Steven, like CJ Stroud is like, I think what the NFL is waiting for.
Is there the 2023 NFL draft as things stands has three guys who have legitimate cases for number one pick. And it just might be what your flavor is. Would if you plopped any of those three guys, Will Anderson, Bryce Young, or CJ Stroud in this draft right here, would they be the foregone conclusion going away number one pick?
Yes, because an edge guy is probably going to go number one, and Will Anderson would blow away Trayvon Walker or Aiden Hutchinson. It would not be a conversation. And we're talking about the quarterbacks might be even more valuable ahead of that. So there might not be a quarterback go. It doesn't feel like the Lions are going to take a quarterback at two. There might not be a quarterback go till six in this draft. But I think if Stroud was in this draft, I think the Panthers, maybe the Giants, maybe the Lions, people would be trying to trade up to number one to take him. And again, this is not against Bryce Young. They're just different styles of quarterbacks. And like right now, because listen, Bryce doesn't run all over the place. Bryce is a guy who is calm and poised and will make a throw in the pocket too. He's just a little shorter than CJ, but I do feel like CJ's a little like Burrow, you know, Nathan, like, I just think that you sort of said that it's a Ryan Day style of quarterback. And by the way, guess what the Ryan Day style of quarterback is. It's the style of quarterback that a lot of NFL teams want as well.
Well, Steve and I were talking on the Tuesday pod, the recruiting pod. We got into some quarterback talk and I brought up this analysis that's out there about how many starts you get. And I think Stroud is going to be an interesting next evolution as far as Ohio State's potential, that search that they've had going on for a while for NFL quarterback success. Because for a while you had these guys like JT Barrett or Troy Davis or whoever, Troy Smith, I mean, who were good football players, obviously great football players, but weren't like pro quarterbacks. But they could get a lot of playing time in college. And then you started trending towards the NFL quarterback at Ohio State, but Haskins only started 1 year. Fields got a year and a half because of the pandemic. And now Stroud can maybe be the best of both worlds, the very pro style quarterback with 2 full years starting, assuming he gets full health this year. I think that could be a good combination. I think it's going to enhance what people are already starting to feel about his draft potential.
So, Steven, if you had to mark this down, you think C.J. Stroud will go number one?
Yeah.
Nathan, if you had to mark it down, do you think C.J. will go number one?
Yeah, I'm trying to think about it, because I think you make a good point about Will Anderson. But, yes, I think someone would trade up and take a quarterback number one, and I think he's the best one right now.
And listen, if you're a kind of team that, like, you think an edge rusher can change your team, and you're just like, oh, if I trade down to four – I'm going to miss on Will Anderson too. Maybe you're not trading it. Cause listen, Myles Garrett went number one and was worth it. Right. I mean, the edge rushers, if you're not going to take a quarterback, edge rusher is probably the next position to get your most bang for the buck out of the number one pick. So we just don't know how it's going to fall, but I would say it too. I'm trying to, if you're on this lookout for who's the next Kenny Pickett, Joe Burrow kind of guy who with their final year in college leaps, I don't know if they leap ahead of CJ. I think Tyler Van Dyke at Miami is the most interesting guy for that. Who's that?
Florida's quarterback.
Anthony Richardson, except Anthony Richardson is like a DeJuan Jones playing quarterback. And so he's like Josh Allen. I don't I think he has a decent amount of development to do in terms of making the throws and processing the game. Mm-hmm. Tyler Van Dyke's got a big arm. Josh Gattis is down there. Josh Gattis ran the ball at Michigan, but I think he'll throw it at Miami because that's what their talent is. We had a Miami writer talking about this on the College Football Survivor show last week. So, but I just think it would take a, lot to jump past CJ because, like, I think CJ is going to go bazonkers, right? So,
I think there's already teams that have CJ Stroud in mind for next year. I mean, you look at the top of this year's round one. I think a lot of these teams are going to stink again next year, whether that's the Lions, the Texans, maybe the Jets and Giants, Panthers,
maybe
Falcons.
Maybe the Jets.
I mean, so
the Jets have their quarterback, but
the Jets have a decent quarterback, and they've got two of the top 10 picks this year, at least right now. So they've at least got themselves a chance to climb back towards, you know, the middle of the first round, probably not the playoffs. So really, like, Jacksonville might be the only one that I'm looking at, and I think, oh, that team's definitely going to stink next year. Actually, the Bears, maybe, that have a young quarterback in place. So I think there's going to be a lot of contenders for that, for wanting to take that number one spot. And somebody might just get it by default.
Yeah.
Someone like Atlanta.
Then, I mean, like, you, it's almost worth tanking for him. Like, I think you could tank for CJ, suck for Stroud. I think that's real. You could definitely do that. I mean, I think he's good enough, and he's going to come out of a system, and he's got the kind of personality. I think he's got the smarts. He's got the accuracy that I think you would feel good about. Like, yeah, we think this guy is going to hit. We'll take him. All right. So we're all predicting, here we are a year early, that CJ Stroud will be the number one pick in the 2023 NFL draft. Who's your second Buckeye off the board, Nathan?
Jackson Smith and Jigba.
Steven, do you agree with that?
Yes.
So I agree with that too, but this goes back to something that when we talked a little bit ahead with Austin Gale of PFF last week, Nathan, he mentioned that Jackson Smith and Jigba staying in the slot, mm-hmm. which we assume is where he's going to get the majority of his snaps this year. Listen, they'll go 12 personnel, only have two receivers, so he'll get some outside stuff. But he's not going to be getting just outside routes on a regular basis where you're facing press man and beating a guy. It's a little different in the slot. Whether that could hold him down to some degree from a draft standpoint, if you just don't get to show it as much the way Garrett got to show both. Jordan Addison is a guy from Pitt who won the Biletnikoff last year, and he's not going to win it this year. Well, they have Pitt quarterback? Keaton Slovis, right? So Kenny Pickett left. They got Keaton Slovis from USC. So they'll still throw it pretty well, but they lost their play caller to Nebraska, right? So some changes at Pitt. It doesn't make me think that Jordan Addison is a better receiver than Jackson Smith and Jigba. I don't know. Xavier Worthy at Texas is a young guy who is super fast, I think, and explosive. And he and Quinn hooked up in the Texas spring game, I think, for a score. So if Quinn Ewers is chucking it, maybe Xavier Worthy makes a move. He might not be old enough to be in the draft next year, though. I don't know. Is there anything that holds you back, Nathan, about Jackson Smith and Jigba as, like, the first receiver off the board next year?
Oh, I don't think you'll be the first receiver off the board.
You don't?
No.
Because of the slot thing?
Yes.
Okay. Because, like, I mean, I guess I said because of the slot thing and you said yes. And then my follow-up question was going to be because of the slot thing. So there actually isn't a follow-up question. Xavier Worthy, by the way, is only in his second year. He won't be in the draft next year. It's just that he just won't get to show it as much.
Well, and this is, again, this is something I didn't research. Buckeye talk. whether there have been examples of other guys who were almost exclusively slot guys in college who then were drafted that high in their class.
Right.
Except Justin Jefferson had 1,400 yards and 88 catches, and he was exclusively in the slot for LSU, and it's probably why he fell. And
was he the first receiver off the board in that class?
No, he wasn't. He fell because he was – right, but like that's now the example of maybe the guy who's exclusively in the slot just because they want to get him the ball as much as possible shouldn't fall. And also, I know he's going to be in the slot when there are three wide receivers on the field. Which is most of the time, but also – they got really creative in that Rose Bowl, and I'm pretty sure that's going to be what it is all season next year. So just I think it's a disservice to just say, oh, he's going to just be in the slot. I think Jackson is going to be everywhere on the field, regardless of who the other 10 guys are out there with him. So.
Well, but a lot of it is, I think the NFL, they want to see you line up and beat press man. And I actually think if he does move around, it'll be like trying to free him up and get him away from doubles and like not let teams overplay him. So I agree with what you're saying, Steven, that I think it's a little probably simplistic to say he'll just be in the slot the whole time. But I don't know that he'll get the reps that the NFL is looking for an outside receiver. I think the way he'll be moved around maybe still won't put him in that position. And then, but I think it is worth noting that the league learns, it better learn.
Yeah.
And that Justin Jefferson, right, he's underdrafted because of how he was used. He winds up being 1, 2, 3, 4, the fifth receiver taken in the 2020 NFL draft behind two Alabama guys, Henry Ruggs and Jerry Jeudy, CeeDee Lamb and Jalen Reagor. Reagor's a huge miss by them. I think you could defend CeeDee Lamb.
Yeah.
And the Bama guys were super talented and explosive, but he should have gone higher. But I do think, Nathan, that I think they're both points are right. See, like, hey, Justin Jefferson was in the slot a lot. Was he the first receiver off the board? No, he was fifth. See? And also, oh, maybe they'll look at Jackson Smith and Jigba as the next Justin Jefferson and say, we let that guy fall too far. But does it mean that he'll jump from where Jefferson was taken at 22 into the top 10? I don't know. But it certainly looks like, Nathan, that right now he feels like, it's because we don't know any better, the most talented receiver in college football this season. We just don't know exactly how that'll translate a year from now in the draft.
Yeah, I mean, another way to ask it would be, and this is not completely fair, but like, where do you think he would be going? Where would he be ranked right now among the receivers in this draft?
So I think he could be as high as like 3 or 4, but
yeah,
I don't know what he'll run. I don't know what he'll run. So you, and that's the thing that's going to happen. You're usually going to have like a burner in the draft. You're usually going to have a big guy like Drake London. Drake London's a big guy. Jameson Williams is a burner in this draft. And then Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave are kind of like just the guys in between, the complete receivers. Treylon Burks is the other big guy. So I think Jackson isn't on an end of the spectrum, Steven. He's not, I don't think he's Jameson Williams, and he's not Drake London. He's not going to grow 5 inches, but he's like a good complete receiver who has good size, good speed, good routes, good hands, good intelligence, good instincts, good feel for the game, all those kind of things. But if some guy runs a 4.25 at the combine, maybe he'll go ahead of Jackson Smith and Jigba, right? I don't know.
That might just be with everybody in that room not named Marvin Harrison, and maybe Jaden Ballard too, but I want to see his 40 time in first. That just might be where Ohio State wide receivers live, just because of the body types that Brian Hartline goes after. They're all 6'1", 195 pounds. Yep. So you're never going to have the big Drake London guy. And every so often you're going to get the JMO, just because, I mean, Jameson Williams was here, but for the most part, you're just going to get the complete receivers. And so you're going to run into a scenario where like Garrett Wilson's probably the best wide receiver prospect in the 2022 NFL draft. But it's not a complete guarantee he's the first wide receiver taken off the board. He might not even be the second, depending on how many people fall in love with Jameson Williams and the speed that might be there.
Which is exactly why I wouldn't predict Jackson Smith Jigba to be the first one picked next year.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. I'm not going to completely rule that out just because the Justin Jefferson did do what he did. And in pro sports, you do kind of learn from your past.
Yeah, but again, when we looked at that list of guys who were taken ahead of him, like really only one team missed, I would say. I would say that the Eagles whiffed big time. I think all those other picks are defensible. I mean, Henry Ruggs looks bad in retrospect too.
Yeah,
but
Ruggs was a speed guy. Ruggs was like the JMO of that draft. Yeah. He was the first guy. Ruggs was a speed guy that I think the Raiders always fall in love with speed. And I think maybe he was less of a complete receiver than everybody. Yeah. The off field horrific incident notwithstanding.
I just think those were defensible picks.
Yeah.
And I think that, again, the way you're kind of describing that rundown you just gave of Smith and Jigba is basically like there's a lot of ways he'll equate to the Garrett Wilson profile, except Garrett Wilson will have had more of a perimeter presence in college to have proven himself than Smith and Jigba will have had at that time, we think. I suppose there's also a world where does Ohio State just move him outside and make Emeka Buga the slot and stop messing around with these other guys at the Z? I don't know.
There's no indication also, of that.
There's no indication of it. I'm just
– No. But also, they do enough 12 personnel stuff here that he'll get outside work.
No, he will. He will. So I'll be curious to see in the end next year what the snap breakdowns are compared to like what they were for him this year and what they were for Garrett in his career. All right. But I mean, why not do this? Why not do it? It'll be helpful next year. I just said seventh for Jaxon Smith-Njigba. I don't know. Nathan, how about a number?
Oh, like 12th.
Steven?
I'll go 10th just to be annoying and be in the middle.
All right. Who's next? Steven, who do you think is the next Buckeye drafted next year?
So do we want to have the Paris discussion here?
If that's who you think is next.
I mean, let's have it.
Okay.
He's like, and like, there's not a lot of way too early mock drafts, but whatever is out there, his name is out there. So it's not completely crazy for it to, for him to go Evan Neal and go from guard to tackle, even though Evan Neal went guard, right tackle, left tackle, then out. I mean, if Paris is the talent that we all think he is, it might be on the table for him, and he'll be playing the position that is a hot commodity in the NFL, especially at draft time.
Yeah. That's who I would have next. Nathan, who would you have next? Would you have Paris next?
Yes, with the caveat that if he isn't going to be a first-round pick, do we know for sure that he'll be in this draft class?
I don't think he will be.
No, I think that makes sense to me as we tried to, you know, guess the same kind of thing with Zach Harrison, right? The Zach Harrison is in school, but if he was going to be a first-round pick, he might not be in school. So that is – I don't know that any of us would predict that next year Paris Johnson will be a fourth round pick, because if Paris Johnson's a fourth round pick next year, Stephen, he's probably not a pick because he'll be a senior in 2023.
Yeah, literally. Because he plays that position. Yes.
So go ahead, Nathan. Good.
I was actually going to, so as I was trying to decide whether I was going to pick him to go in the first round, I went and looked at the guys who are projected to go in this first round, the tackles projected to go in this first round. And I looked at their PFF numbers. And these are all guys who played tackle last year, so that's one of the big differences. But Evan Neal had an overall score 85.8 and 83.6 for pass blocking. Aiku Okonwu from North Carolina State was 91.6 overall, but only 78.3 on pass blocking. Charles Cross from Mississippi State, 86.7 overall, but 84.9 for pass blocking. And then Trevor Penning from Northern Iowa, they didn't have numbers for because he's not an FBS player. So then Paris Johnson this past year, 79.1 overall, but only 65.4 on pass blocking. And that was at a position though, where that's not your primary job. So I think it's fair to make the leap based on his pedigree, based on the flashes that we've seen. But it definitely falls into the same category as last year when we were talking about Zach Harrison. We were even more so than we were talking about Nicholas Petit-Frere. It gets much more of a projection than a assumption based on what we've actually seen, I would argue, with Paris Johnson Jr.
Yeah, it's hard when the guy hasn't played the position yet and we're trying to guess, will he be a first-round pick at the position that he has not yet played? At the college level.
And the value
level.
Is so tied into that position.
Mm-hmm. Right. So but I'm going to do it. I'm going to project him as a first round pick. Yeah. Steven, do you think he'll be a first round pick next year?
Yes.
So I looked at the PFF. PFF's just so good with some of this stuff. They had like the 10 best tackles returning to college football this year. They have Peter Skoronski from Northwestern as number one. Andrew Voorhees of USC, number two. They have DeJuan Jones, number three, and we'll get to DeJuan Jones shortly. They had Jordan McFadden of Clemson, four, Cooper Beebe of Kansas State, five, and Paris is six. So I think Peter Skoronski has played a bunch of snaps at Northwestern. He took over when Marshawn Slater opted out in the COVID year. He's like a good, solid Big Ten tackle. That feels like a guy who projects as a first-round pick, right? We're not going to pretend we know a bunch of other tackles. But like Paris is sixth on that list, Nathan, like having never played the position. So it's like a five-star who started last year and we think is born to do this. And he's going to have opportunities because they're going to throw it a lot. He's going to have opportunities to pass block. You assume he'll go against some decent edge guys in the Big Ten. He'll have a chance to show what he can do. It is a tough projection, Nathan, and it seems a little bit crazy. But if you were ever going to predict a guy to go in the first round a year ahead of time while playing a position that he's never played before in college football, this is the guy I'd do it with.
I think it helps, too, to have been as highly ranked as he once was, because I think teams already kind of have you in mind a little bit. They're thinking 3-4 years out. That's a guy they're going to have to know about. How much does the spring game give us any pause here?
Not that much.
Not really. I think it's you watch it in August and see how everybody's progressing, especially when you're talking about where he'll be by the time of the NFL draft a year from now, right? After he's gone through interviews and gone through the combine, does it give you a slight hesitation about the Notre Dame game? Maybe a tiny bit. In terms of draft prospect, I just think I would still expect that, like, I think he'll get it to a first round level by the time the season ends.
I think an answer might also be that at the end of the day, some of the edge rushing talent Ohio State has, yes, might end up being better NFL prospects than what Paris Johnson Jr. is too. That doesn't mean Paris Johnson Jr. won't still be a first round pick.
Like the spring game, unless they play Bama in a national championship game, the spring game might be like the hardest competition Paris faces all year. But then also, I think we discussed this a little bit in the post-screen game pod, the idea of, okay, Jack beat him 4 times and they were loud, and you remember those. But what about the other 66 snaps when Paris just did his job so you didn't pay attention to him?
And I do think the spring game in that format for a guy who's sliding out the tackle for the first time, and is it a real game? Is it not? How hard are you supposed to go? Are you doing all your little tricks? Are y'all, you know, you're doing a little sneaky hold on a guy. You're trying to like take a guy to the ground. You're not. And all, when here comes a spin move, it's, am I going 85%? Am I going 91%? Am I going 76%? And now Jack Sawyer is spin moving me. What are we doing here? Right. That I could see how Paris is like so smart that he almost, I could imagine, like, I was thinking about too much because it wasn't like a real game, but just let me get to a game and line up a Notre Dame guy across from me. And he's not getting CJ. I could see that being a thing too. So let's just, hey, we're going to do this. We're going to throw out numbers. Steven, where do you think, give me a number. Paris Johnson will be the blank pick in the 2023 NFL draft.
Now I'm a little annoyed that I took Jackson so high, because I think you might also be able to make the case that there's a better chance that Paris is the first guy his position taken off the board, that Jackson is his position. But I'll say 15.
Nathan?
I'll say like 20.
I have 23. So there's like four in this tackle class. There's like four guys who are all going to go, I think. Three really high, and Penning probably pretty high. Mm-hmm. Probably four tackles in the top 20. There's always a lot of tackles, right? It's a good, hey, you want to play a position, teach your kid to be a tackle, because that's just, you just teach your kid that to be 6'8". Teach your kid to be 6'8 with a 7'5 wingspan. Three tackles in the first round last year. Six tackles in the first round in 2020, four tackles in the first round in 2019, only two in 2018, only two in 2017. I guess those six tackles 2 years ago was what really sticks in my mind. It was like, man, everybody wants a tackle. Everybody wants Paris Johnson. And I also think everybody wants DeJuan Jones. So is DeJuan Jones next on our list? The guy we think will be the fourth Buckeye drafted in 2023. He is for me. Nathan, how about for you?
I think so. I do not have him as a first rounder.
Steven, is he your fourth guy off the board?
Yeah, I'm going to sneak him in.
Okay.
The first round.
So there's a guy in particular that is a comparison for me, because this issue is giant tackle. Giant tackle. Mekhi Becton is the guy that I think gets compared, is the guy that I compare him to a lot. Mekhi Becton, 2020 NFL draft. He's the number 11 overall guy. This was when the Browns were going to take a tackle. The Browns took Jedrick Wills at number 10, right ahead of Becton. He was 6'7", 364. And I do think there was, you know, people weren't 100% sure. Some people loved him. Some people were a little iffy on him. But the guy that I think is a better comparison in some ways for DeJuan Jones is a guy who went 30th in that draft. And he was a guy that people early in the draft process did not, maybe even late in the draft process, did not think was going to be a first round pick. It's Isaiah Wilson of Georgia. He was 6'6", 350. DeJuan's bigger than that. But he was the second best tackle on his own team. Andrew Thomas was the number four pick in that draft from Georgia. And he was the second tackle at Georgia. And I think, like, while you're there, you're looking and you're studying, it's like, man, this guy's big. Man, this guy's physical. Man, this guy's athletic. And you fall in love with Isaiah Wilson. He winds up going 30th to the Titans. Terrible off the field issues. DUI, is like in a car chase. Gets traded by the Titans after his rookie year to the Dolphins. Gets released by the Dolphins. Gets released by the Giants. Has all these off field issues. That's not at all what I'm comparing DeJuan Jones to. Steven, what I'm comparing is a giant tackle that they're all going to be looking at Paris, we think. And not that they wouldn't be looking at DeJuan, but I think the more you look at DeJuan Jones, it's like, my gosh, that guy is big. And it sure seems like he knows how to play too. And I think that combination will leave some uncertainty about what kind of NFL player he is. But I could see somebody saying, Steven, there's not many guys who are 6'8 with a 7'5 wingspan and 375. Let's go. There's nobody else like him in this draft. Let's go. I'll squeeze him in at the end of the first round. What's your thought process, Steven, on DeJuan Jones?
I mean, I was going to tell a joke of he's such a Raiders pick. And we're all gonna, like, this is the exact type of guy the Raiders would pick where it's a project where it doesn't make any sense why you're taking him at like 14 because he would have been there at like 64. But no, I think it'll be that. But also, I mean, he's going to have more experience at tackle than Paris Johnson is, even if it's at right tackle, because he started a game in 2020 when, you know, the entire offensive line had COVID. And then he's going to be a 2-year starter. And on top of that, there's always been this talk of what his athleticism is for a guy that big. And I think that's what's going to put him over the top is he's that size. He's got experience and he might just steal the show at the combine.
I think that's an important way to think about it, though, is his athleticism good for someone of his size? And does that mean the athleticism is good enough that teams will see first round value with him in the draft? I mean, he said that the feedback he got for this year was that he was in like that fourth, fifth round, I think.
Yeah.
Yes. Conversation. So do we think another year pushes him up 100-150 spots in people's estimations in the draft? I'm skeptical of that. So that's why I'm thinking he'd be more like a maybe high second round guy than a surefire first round guy.
I do think, I mean, that happens for sure. I was a fifth rounder and then I turned myself into a first rounder. Also, if I were Justin Fry and I want to be a head coach, you know what's going to get me on people's radars? Mm-hmm. 2 first-round tackles. And I put the finishing touches on DeJuan Jones, who we've talked about. Everything Greg Studrawa said about DeJuan Jones. He said if it hits, he's a first rounder. He said that 3 years ago. But he's not right now. As you just said, Nathan, we have proof. He's not right now. All right, Justin Fry, future Indiana head coach Justin Fry, get down to business. It's go time. All right, Paris Johnson, he's never played tackle. All right, let's go, Justin Fry. And so, I mean, that's why this guy's here, Steven, right?
Yeah.
They made an offensive line change. They got to develop these guys. This is a great opportunity for a coach with aspirations.
I mean, I think of the coaches who would pull the Jeff Hafley and be here for a year and be gone, I think we're all on the same page and saying Justin Fry is the best candidate for that. If we get to the midway point of the season and it's pretty clear that Paris is a first rounder and DeJuan Jones is going to sneak in there, I think we should all get a U-Haul and go help Justin Fry move out because he's going to be leaving after next season.
Tom Allen will.
Yes.
Put his house on the market in October because Justin Fry is coming.
Heading into the Indiana game, he's just going to give him his keys.
I do think there's a part of DeJuan Jones that I don't know that he's going to answer every question because he's just a different kind of player. He's fairly new to football, but people sometimes like that because as he's going to wind up being a 2-year starter, Steven, as you said, but he was basketball first in high school. He's kind of new. You can always talk yourself into the idea that everything he is, there's still more to come wait till my offensive line coach in the NFL gets my hands on him. So I'm going to say first round for DeJuan Jones. I'll just say number 30. I'm just making stuff up. Steven, you want to throw a number out there? Where will DeJuan be picked?
32.
And Nathan, you want to say second round for DeJuan? Yeah. Is that your official?
I'll go like 39.
Okay. We don't have to put numbers on the second round. So we'll just say second round, and that way you can be right. If he's 41, but I'll put, well, we said it. You said 39. I'm going to lose this piece of paper, so I don't know why I'm writing it down. Oh, let me put this away. I'll save this.
No one's
yellow,
recording it.
Yeah. This yellow legal tablet for 368 days. Okay. Steven, who do you think is next? The next Buckeye off the board in the 2023 NFL draft?
This is where it gets a little bit difficult. I'm going to say Ronnie Hickman.
Is that who do you have, Nathan, as your fifth Buckeye off the board?
I have Zach Harrison, and I think it wouldn't surprise me if he went ahead of Jones.
I also have Zach Harrison, and I continue to think that I just think it's possible we're all sort of underrating Zach Harrison, who a year ago we thought would be a first round pick in this draft, stays in school, and now what do we think of him? I continue to think that if Tyquan Lewis was a second round pick and Sam Hubbard was a third round pick, I think he's in that range. I mean, I just think even if he's not, if we have established that he's not Chase Young and he's not the Boses, okay. Well, is he Tyquan Lewis? Is he Tyquan Lewis? I think he can be Tyquan Lewis, who is a good, solid NFL player. And I think was a good pick. He was 64, I think, in the second round. I think that's fine. So Steven, I know you said Ronnie Hickman. We'll get to him, but let's all talk about Zach Harrison here first. I'm going to say second round for Zach Harrison. And I just think, Nathan, that it's possible that if Zach Harrison is a little better, you know, maybe you do a little more versatile stuff. Maybe you show that you can, you know, be an outside linebacker in a 3-4 because you do a little bit of jack stuff or whatever. You throw a little bit of stuff in there with what he's already done, with what he is physically, with his who he is as a person. I don't think, Nathan, he has to make a giant leap to be the 58th pick in the draft next year. I think he might be a little bit on track for that already.
Yes, I agree with that. And I went back and looked, again, using PFF numbers, this is the 2021 draft, and it was not a top-heavy edge rusher draft like what you have this year. No edge rushers went off the board, I think, until 18, and that first one was Jalen Phillips from Miami. So PFF scores 86.6 overall, but 87.6 in pass rush. At 21, Kwity Paye from Michigan, 86.3 overall, 87.1 in pass rush. 28, Peyton Turner from Houston, 87.7 overall, 90 in pass rush. By the way, for people who don't know, it's like a scale of 100. So 100 is the best possible score. Gregory Rousseau at 30 didn't play in 2021 from Miami. And then 31, Jason Owe or Dafe Owe from Penn State, 85.3 and 80.3 overall. And when you look at Zach Harrison's numbers, if you're just going by PFF grade, 88.8 overall with an 86.6 pass rush in 2020. It dipped to 82 overall, but still an 86.4 pass rush in 2021. So they're giving him really strong pass rush grade. So that made me think, well, there's a difference between grades and production. So maybe all these guys that were going in the first round in that 2021 draft, maybe they were actually just getting to the quarterback. And in some cases that was correct. You had, you know, Jalen Phillips had 8 sacks in 10 games. Peyton Turner had 5 sacks in 5 games. Gregory Rousseau, again, didn't play in 2020, but he had 15 and a half sacks in 13 games. So he went into that year, people thinking he might be like contending for the first overall pick and was going to be a big time pick. But Kwity Paye had 2 sacks in 4 games that year. Jason Owe, who went 31st overall, 0 sacks in 7 games in 2020, and was still a first-round pick as a defensive end. So, yes, it's very true that Zach Harrison has not been a generational edge rush talent. I think it's possible he's still a first-round edge rush talent in the NFL in a draft like this. If it's a top-heavy, if there's a bunch of really talented edge rushers, he won't be. But I think in this, like if you put him in this class, he could have gone ahead of Jason Owe.
Jason Owe, one of those guys. That was like when Nicholas Petit-Frere and Thayer Munford jumped on the scene because yeah. Those Penn State edge rush guys had the door slammed on them in that game. It was why, honestly, I always, like, I can't help it. What I see affects how I view guys. Oh, I was like, he's not a first rounder. It's like, he couldn't get around Thayer Munford. He's not a first rounder. And it's like, oh no, the Ravens really like him. And he's like a good NFL player. So I am influenced by that. I will say, I do predict that a year from now, PFF will have Zach Harrison as a first round pick, because they always have guys that they have a little different view on than the general draft consensus. He feels like a guy that they could love. Steven, where are you on this? Where are you thinking Zach Harrison might be drafted a year from now?
I think he's mid second round. I think Zach Harrison's PFF numbers are the most perplexing things in the world to me, because it's like they're up there with like Chase Young and Nick Bosa a lot of the times. It's just the actual box score production is not there, which is why we don't put him in that category. So it constantly makes me go, so why isn't he getting home if he's doing all the things that makes him this impactful according to these numbers? Like, I don't know. Is it just he gets home? He gets there, but like the play, the way that offensive scheme against Ohio State doesn't allow them to get the statistics and whatnot. But I also just think that edge rusher is such a premium position in the first round. Quarterback is like this. Corners like this. Wide receiver is kind of like this too, where you see tackle as well. Like, you see such a heavy load of it on day one that teams kind of cool off in the second round a little bit. You see more, you know, that's why I said Ronnie Hickman. You'll see the safeties, you'll see the guards, the interior linemen and all that stuff. Kind of the running backs kind of go in the second round. And then as you get later and closer to the third round, that's when you'll see the premium positions pick back up. And maybe that's just me overthinking it a little bit, but I think he's a, you know, a surefire second rounder at worst.
Yeah. I think when it comes to sack production, you've got the guys like the Youngs and Bosas who are one man wrecking crews. They can go in and finish those on their own. For most other players, most other even really good edge rushers, a lot of times sacks are a team statistic. It's somebody gets there, flushes the quarterback the other way, and there's a guy there to take him down. And I think some of Harrison's production, and it's the whole defensive line's production, has lagged a little bit because there hasn't been even somebody else as good as Harrison to kind of balance that out. I think if there were just somebody else as good as Harrison up on this defensive line, which there hasn't been now for a few years, and I think that's going to change in 2022. I think this could be a year where the defensive line production as far as sacks picks up, because now when that guy gets flushed, when that quarterback has to move, he's moving into treachery, which hasn't been happening the last couple of years.
Moving into treachery. Buckeye talk. So Steven, you have Zach Harrison in the second round, although you didn't have him as the next guy. Nathan, where do you have Zach Harrison? What round?
I'm thinking in that same range as Jones, maybe even a little bit higher. I'm going to say like 34. I could totally see him being, I haven't researched the depth of edge rushing talent in the 2023 NFL draft. If it's a thinner class, I think he's maybe a late first round pick.
Okay. So we all have him in the second round. So I think we're pretty much in agreement on where we see him as a draft prospect right now. So Steven, let's go to Ronnie Hickman then. And I'm curious at your conversation here. What do you see Ronnie? You just see Ronnie Hickman as a second rounder who could go higher than Zach Harrison. Is that how you're thinking about it?
Yeah. And it might just be like seven picks before, because the team seven picks before Zach gets picked needs a safety. And at this, the way things are trending, he can play either safety spot in the NFL, because he's going to play free safety this year. He played strong safety last year. He, you know, racked up a bunch of tackles, and Jim Knowles has fallen in love with him, and he's known him for 4 months. And I'm wondering if, as we've talked about maybe off camera a lot more, this idea of like Ohio State recruits these high IQ players. If this guy goes out here and performs at a high level again, and then he gets on the board with some people at the combine and in these meetings, teams fall in love with Ronnie Hickman. And they pair that with the production they've seen on the field from him the last two seasons, and it makes him a second round pick, even though right now, without me saying that, you probably weren't thinking Ronnie Hickman was a second round pick.
Can I interrupt here? Because I was looking for this the whole time we were talking about Zach Harrison. I finally found it. PFF edge rushers returning to college football in 2022, Zach Harrison is seventh. Will Anderson is first on that list. And Zach Harrison is ahead of two of the big Clemson guys, Miles Murphy and Xavier Thomas. So I just wanted to put that Zach Harrison context in there. So Ronnie Hickman, this idea, I do think a couple guys I would watch in the 2022 NFL draft to see of the the peak of Ronnie Hickman, I think, might be a guy like Lewis Cine, who is kind of a captain of the back end of the defense for Georgia at safety, and Jaquan Brisker, who was a leader playmaker back end guy for Penn State this year. I really like Jaquan Brisker. When you look at the mock draft consensus on them, they have Lewis Cine at 34 as the third safety, Jaquan Brisker at 51 overall player as the fifth safety. The thing for me on Hickman is sort of positional value. And part of it is, if he's going to be like their Jordan Fuller, it's like, well, Jordan Fuller was really good at being their Jordan Fuller, and he was a sixth round pick. So I'm curious how much playmaking the adjuster will get to do. Listen, Malik Hooker was a mid first round pick playing free safety for Ohio State. But I think we've talked about that we believe Hickman's a little more Fuller than he is Hooker. Again, turns out, oh, Jordan Fuller underdrafted. He's a captain of the team that won the Super Bowl. Now, he got hurt at the end of the year and they won the Super Bowl without him. But he was really important to the LA Rams defense. He's played in the NFL much better than a sixth round pick. But I'm curious, Nathan, what the defense will allow Ronnie Hickman to show and how much that will interest NFL teams.
This is just one of kind of the juncture we've gotten to where I think we need to make sure not to get confused with this guy does his job super well for Ohio State, which is a team that expects to play at the top of college football, which makes this guy a great NFL draft prospect, because that's not always the case. And Fuller is a good example of that. You could say that about Malik Harrison. You could say that about a lot of guys. Like, I just don't know that I've seen the kind of like athletic separation and just the, I don't know if, does Ronnie Hickman go out and just make plays that make you say wow a little bit on the field as a safety? I don't know if I see that. I think I see a guy who is great at doing his job, and I think that has great value for Ohio State. I think it will have value for an NFL team. I just wouldn't think it'll happen this high in the draft for him.
I do wonder, Steven, is like a Pete Werner comparison worthy here? Different yes. positions, but it's like, hey, Ronnie Hickman's really good. He's more athletic than he's given credit for. He makes tackles. And when the NFL comes to call him, they're going to be like, yeah, we want that. And then, by the way, Pete Werner, who was a second round pick, has been a very good NFL player in his first year in the NFL.
Very perfect comparison there, because I think we all spent this Pete Werner's entire career going, why does everybody love Pete Werner so much? It doesn't make any sense. We're all pro Baron Browning here. And then it's like, well, no, the NFL like really likes Pete Werner too. And now he's a really quality linebacker for the Saints. So perfect comparison where it's like, I don't know if I was expecting Jim Knowles to fall in love with Ronnie Hickman, but he did. And, you know, I maybe a year from now, the NFL tells us why he fell in love with Ronnie Hickman.
But I don't think it's a perfect comparison, because Pete Werner, what was it that set him apart from other linebackers? It was his athletic traits trended towards a different kind of position that he could, the way he could fit in the NFL, that towards a more athletic version of a linebacker. I don't know that we've seen Ronnie Hickman do anything that like sets him apart from all other safeties that are going to be in this draft class. And also the thing that Jim Knowles, I think, is falling in love with isn't just like, from what he said, I don't get the impression that it's just like, oh my God, he's out just dominating the field and making a bunch of plays. I think he likes him at that adjuster spot as much as for how he thinks the game. And when it comes down to NFL draft profile, just athleticism is such a huge part of that.
So Steven, you have Ronnie Hickman in the second round, right?
Mm-hmm.
I have him in the fourth, and I didn't intend it necessarily, but it's like the fourth, that's halfway between second round Pete Werner and sixth round Jordan Fuller. So like a good solid football player who maybe doesn't have the opportunities slash elite athleticism to stand out to a greater level. Nathan, give me a round for Ronnie Hickman.
You know, I actually hadn't even done rounds for everybody. Fourth sounds right to me. I'm thinking like, I mean, some of the guys we've seen go in that range, I think Browning was like the first pick of the fourth round. Like,
I think Browning was a third round pick, but yeah.
Was he a third round pick or last of the third round?
Like
so
it was like extra picks.
Yeah. Okay. So, but 90s. Like, yeah, that makes sense to me.
Okay. So I do think this is a specific conversation. Who do you think will be drafted higher next year, Josh Proctor or Ronnie Hickman? Because it's a, you know, if you think that Josh Proctor will be out, what do you think, Steven?
Ronnie Hickman, even if I think Josh Proctor's the better athlete. some of that is injury history, because like the leg isn't the only problem Josh Proctor's had since he's been here.
Yeah. Did he have a shoulder? What was that? Was another thing?
The shoulder thing that basically kept him out. A lot of that's part of the reason he didn't play more snaps in 2019, along with them only playing a single high. So he had a shoulder thing.
So I have Josh Proctor slightly ahead of Ronnie Hickman, just based on maybe a pop year, a little more dynamic. And again, we'll be curious to see how he's used. Maybe, although I do think in the end, maybe Hickman and Proctor are used more similarly, and that whatever the names are, depends how a team lines up and you have the two safeties that, you know, change their positions before the snap, but can both do both things, as Knowles has kind of indicated. I just have Proctor in the third and Hickman in the fourth. Nathan, how are you sort of thinking about those two guys?
Yeah, that's how I would do it too. And Proctor is the one, even if he has been banged up and obviously, you know, the broken leg, that's not, I don't know how much teams will hold that against him, because that's not like one of those like nagging recurring injuries. I think that's where, when it's a guy that just can't stay on the field for any reason, I think that's where teams maybe ding you. When you just get a leg broken, a compound leg fracture, that's just sort of really bad football luck. So I don't know how much that would get held against him. He does need to play healthy this year though. And when he has played, we've seen those flashes. Some of it you have to go all the way back to 2019, but you've seen the playmaking flashes with him. So he intrigues me more just as what his ceiling is as a playmaker, not just in 2022. I think NFL teams would say the same thing. If you got Proctor and Hickman sitting side by side, which one do you bank on being able to come to the NFL and make difference making plays? Right now, I think it might be Proctor.
So what position or what round would you want to?
Third round is fine.
Steven, yeah. Where would you throw Proctor for a round?
Third round.
Third. All right. So we're all in agreement on Josh Proctor in the third round.
Yeah.
It's just that Steven has Ronnie Hickman in the second. We have Ronnie Hickman in the fourth. So I think we're all in the same range on how we're potentially evaluating these guys. So that is C.J. Stroud, Jackson Smith and Jigba, Paris Johnson, DeJuan Jones, Zach Harrison, Josh Proctor, and Ronnie Hickman. That is seven players that we all agree we think will be taken in the 2023 NFL draft, all pretty decently high. After this break, we'll come back. We'll wrap up. How many more guys do we think will be picked a year from now? We'll make those predictions on Buckeye Talk. All right. So I did go through, and as the roster stands now, I just wanted to get the lay of the land of like who's here, who's eligible to be drafted a year from now in the 2023 NFL draft. So I looked at the four recruiting classes that would apply to. There's one guy on this roster from the 2017 recruiting class for Ohio State. You guys know who it is?
From the 2017 class?
Yep.
Mitch Rossi?
No. I don't know. Jerron Cage.
Oh, yeah.
So he's the one guy. So they had 17 guys in that class. One remains. 2018 class, they had 26 guys. Only nine are left from the 2018 class. Now, again, that's a fifth-year guy by now. That's Teron Vincent, Taraja Mitchell, Matthew Jones, Josh Proctor, Cameron Babb, Tyler Friday, JJB, Cam Brown, and who's the last one? I can't read what I wrote. Yeah. And then the 2019 class, there's 9 of 17 guys still on the roster. The 2020 class, so guys that we'd be predicting coming out after year 3, there's 19 of the 25 guys still around from the 2020 class. So big class. We have seven guys off the board. Nathan, how many more guys do you think will be drafted a year from now?
I have 4 more guys on my list.
Steven, how many more guys do you think will be drafted?
Will get drafted? I'll say 5 or 6.
Okay. I have 3. So since I have the fewest, I'll run through my 3. I have Matthew Jones as an interior offensive lineman. Nathan, do you have him?
Yes.
Steven, do you have him?
Yes.
All right. I have Matthew Jones in the 5th round, for what it's worth. Anyone else want to make a round pick on Matthew Jones?
That seems reasonable.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. I have Teron Vincent from the class of 2018. Steven, you have him?
Yes.
Nathan?
Yes.
I have him in the 6th round. Where do you guys want to put him?
I think that makes sense too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Boy, we're agreeing. And the last guy for me, I have Cam Brown in the seventh. Nathan, did you have Cam Brown?
Yeah.
Steven?
I did.
Okay. Nathan, who else? So I have 10 that I arrived at. And if I forgot somebody, when you say somebody, I might say, oh, yeah, yeah, no, no, no. I agree with that too. But for now, I'm at 10. Nathan, who else do you have?
The one that I snuck on here, and I don't really have a great reason for assuming this, but I put Tanner McAllister on here.
Yeah.
The fact that Jim Knowles said that he was surprised he came to Ohio State in the first place because he thought he was going off to the NFL already. Now, that also means that Tanner McAllister probably got feedback that said he wasn't ready to go to the NFL yet. So some of this, I think, if you think Tanner McAllister is going to come here and be Ohio State starter this fall and keep the job, I think that's the kind of guy who, having played this much college football, could be a very late round draft pick. If you think he's going to get usurped, then he's probably a undrafted free agent.
So I kind of forgot about him because I was looking at recruiting classes and he's a transfer. So okay. I will keep him off my list anyway. Steven, are you feel pretty good about McAllister getting drafted?
Yeah, I think he slides in six, maybe low fifth, okay. Sixth round, somewhere around there.
All right. So, Nathan, do you have anybody else?
Those are the ones that I thought, like, for sure.
Okay. So that's 11. I have 10. Steven, who else do you have?
That's for sure. And then I'm going to cheat and say the insert 2020 guy who just either pops or someone who – or like the Mike Weber situation where it's like what's Mayan Williams' upside here as a draft prospect? Seriously.
I just don't know if he might be better served by transferring somewhere to go be a starter, but you think maybe he'd just say, well, let's take my shot.
Yeah. Shock me completely. I'm not saying it's one, but like, there's like a 15% of me was like, if it happens next year, I'd be like, all right, yeah, I could see why you did that.
But I know why Master Teague did it, because Master Teague knew he was going to go to, if not a combine invite, then his pro day and be the baddest mofo in the building. I do not believe that of Mayan Williams.
Master Teague didn't have to do a single thing on his pro day. I still think he would have been the baddest mofo.
Okay, well then, yeah, my point is made for me then. Yeah, just take his shirt off, maybe not even all the way, and teams are like, okay, no, that guy, yeah.
No, just wear a tank top.
Yeah.
Some sunglasses.
I think I would agree more with Doug. I think that would be a pretty big leap for Mayan to try to make off of what is going to be another backup season.
So that's my flyer. And then obviously, I mean, the Marshawn Lattimore, Julian Fleming thing, which I know we're all tired of talking about at this point.
Well, no, but we haven't talked about Julian Fleming. I think we should talk about that. Cool. That's probably the biggest guy. I mean, when you look at the four top recruits in the class of 2020 for Ohio State, Julian Fleming's first, and it's Paris Johnson, Jackson Smith and Jigba, and CJ Stroud. We all think the other three might be first round picks a year from now, but none. We have not yet talked about Julian Fleming. What's your scenario, Steven, where Julian Fleming winds up as a draft pick a year from now?
He's healthy the whole year. Ohio State has 2,000-yard receivers, and he's one of them because he's just a deep threat, even if his like receptions are low. He's their Chris Olave because he's the Z receiver. And like since some of it is just kind of based on how some of the other wide receivers have talked, not just necessarily about him, but just about the room in general and the idea of, I think Keon Gray said it. We're going to have two this year. We're going to have two next year. And then we're probably going to have two the year after that. And what he's referring to is Garrett and Chris this year, Julian and Jackson are the only guys eligible for next year. And then like Emeka and Marvin go the year after that. So just the idea of he finally gets healthy and we get to fall camp and by midway through the season, we're not asking him injury questions anymore. We're asking him a bunch of questions about how he keeps burning cornerbacks and getting deep balls from CJ Stroud.
Bab will technically be eligible, but yes, I think that's
I
see what he's saying there. For me with Fleming, I have no visual evidence that he is an above average college receiver right now. I just don't have it. Like, and that's not really, it's on knock against him because he's been hurt and they bring great guys ahead of him. And that combination is just not going to, but when he's had few opportunities, as I've said this before, I don't want to, but he hasn't flashed it the way that other guys did when they got their few opportunities. So this is a huge year for him. I think not to worry about his draft status. I think it's a big year to be healthy, stay on the field, and not get passed up by Emeka Egbuka or someone else.
But if he does all that, if he stays on the field and is able to sort of reach his potential, then that might be guy who leaves to go to the NFL draft. Like, that's not impossible as a third year guy. When you think about, I do like the idea, Stephen, of like a 2020 guy who pops. When you look at the candidates for that, Julian Fleming seems like the best one. G. Scott, probably not. No. As for Cody Simon, seems like a lot. Luke Whippler, I don't know that centers are like 3 years is good enough for me. I'm out of here.
Nobody else plays a position where it's like would make sense for them to like. I don't know if they don't play positions where they could turn themselves into a first round pick in 14 right. games.
Court Williams, we don't probably not. Lathan Ransom's coming back from injury. Cam Martinez. Like, if Cam Martinez surges past Tanner McAllister on the depth chart and he's still a nickel corner, do guys like that jump? Mitchell Melton, Joe Royer, like, hey, suddenly the tight end room is like, oh, Joe Royer, he's ready to go. I mean, probably
he's the
not,
new Kyle right? Pitts.
So, yeah.
And I think Cam Martinez is a great kind of prospect to talk about in this conversation, because you have to remember, it's not just that he would pass up Tanner McAllister and like become a starter. You have to do that to such a degree at that position that it's then worth it to give up your extra year for like being a mid to late rounder, to being a day three pick. Like, that's tougher math for me. I think those guys would still tend to come back and finish out their careers.
Yeah. This is talking about guys who they'd only be in college 3 years.
Right.
So this is, you know, yes. If you're Paris Johnson, Jackson Smith and Jigba or CJ Stroud, that makes a ton of sense. They're always going to have guys who will go after 3 years. There are not really any other obvious candidates, but I do think on the list, Julian Fleming is the best one. And so I was curious if any of us would actually like predict I'm going to mark it down. I think Julian Fleming will be drafted a year from now. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to stick with 10 as my overall number of selections in a year. Nathan, you're going to stick with 11.
Yeah.
And Steven, I know you've mentioned a couple guys here. What do you want your final number to be?
I'll say 12 and continue to drive this bus for Julian Fleming. Just so if I'm right, I can be like, ha, no, look at me.
It's the whole point of being on a podcast. And if you're wrong, just forget it. And if you're right, never let people forget it. It's podcasting 101.
I'm
going to
go on Acast and just delete the entire podcast if I'm wrong. Yeah. I'm not right.
Oh, that'll be someday. Yeah, you'll figure out. It's like, hey, Doug's going through and deleting a bunch of old podcasts. Something must be going on with him. Maybe he's getting ready to run for office and he's trying to clear the history. All right, that's our projections. Thanks to all of you who are listening in the current day, in the year 2022. Thanks to everybody who maybe came back to find this before the 2023 draft, right after the 2023 draft, to see how right and wrong we were. We will be back. Our plan, so this is your Wednesday podcast here in 2022. We won't have a Thursday morning podcast. The next podcast we'll drop on you guys will be reacting to the first round of the NFL draft, where we are certainly assuming Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave will be picked. We will probably do that Thursday night. We'll try to get it up Thursday night. If not, we'll get it up Friday morning. And then the fifth podcast this week, because we've given you Madness Recruiting Pod and this so far, the fifth podcast will be the same thing on day two of the draft on Friday, second and third round. We'll either get it up Friday night or get it up Saturday morning, reacting to rounds two and three. And then we'll take a break and come back on Monday with sort of like a full draft wrap. How many overall guys, the best fits, free agent guys who didn't get drafted and signed as free agents, how'd the Big Ten do, all that kind of stuff. We'll do that on Monday. But for now, thanks for joining us to predict the 2023 NFL draft. For Nathan Baird and Stephen Means, I'm Doug LaMaurice. And that was Buckeye Talk.